Okay, well, welcome everyone. Saturday night by Gary. Winter retreat time, so it's this is definitely our quiet time of year, and we're feels like we're settling nicely into the winter retreat routine. And the theme of the retreat for the readings that we've been doing pretty much every evening, I've been around the four foundations of mindfulness. So that's it's a very fundamental and a very important teaching, very central to the Buddha's approach to liberation, freedom from suffering. You're not gonna think yourself out of suffering. You're not gonna think your way out of it. You really do need to lay the foundation for this quality of mindfulness, awareness, alertness, clarity, attentiveness, many ways of translating, describing, and because most commonly is mindfulness. And of course, there's many, many places that the Buddha refers to and encourages the development of these four establishings of mindfulness: mindfulness of body, mindfulness of feeling, and mindfulness of the mind, and mindfulness of phenomena. So the mindfulness of dhammas. One particular sutta that I have always been inspired by is an account of when Sariputta passed away, and he was actually in his home village near what is now Nalanda, and then passed away. His brother, who was named Chunda, was attending to him, and then after Sariputta passed away, he was aged and had a period of illness and passed away, and then Chunda took his bowl and his robes, say, after dealing with the cremation and whatnot, funeral ceremonies. Then he went back to Savatthi. The first thing he did was go and visit Ananda, and told Ananda and let him know that he brought Sariputta's bowl and robes back to the Sangha. And Ananda said, This is worth going to the Blessed One, going to the Buddha, and letting the Buddha know, because of course Sariputta was considered the right hand disciple of the Buddha, and was instrumental in the establishing and maintaining of the Sangha for so long, and particularly Sariputta being foremost in wisdom. So they went to the Buddha, and Ananda let the Buddha know that Sariputta had passed away, and his brother Chunda, again, was also a monk, had brought his requisites back. And then Ananda expressed that when he heard the news, he said it was just his, and since he had heard the news, he just was out of sorts, couldn't really, he felt kind of overwhelmed with grief, not very clear, not very, is a bit unmoored by Sariputta's passing, and just didn't feel, felt definitely out of sorts, and like he's lost his anchor, lost his mooring. And of course the Buddha, who was sometimes very compassionate and sometimes not, said, "Oh, why are you feeling so unmoored? And did, when Sariputta passed away, did he take your virtue with him, your sila with him? And did he take your samadhi with him?" Did he take your wisdom with him and take your liberation from you, take your knowledge and vision of liberation with you? And then, of course, Ananda says, no. And I said, but he was such a good friend. He was such a, personally, he was a mentor and a guide for me. And for the Sangha, he was a leader of the Sangha and a teacher of the Dhamma who was really, you know, just so important to the Sangha. And the Buddha said, well, it's impossible that anything that has come into being is not going to pass away. And it's impossible that something that is of a compounded nature is not going to disintegrate. And it just is, it's of this very nature, so that, and have I not told you this before? and of course, Ananda, yes, of course, still, that's the feeling is there. And then the Buddha said that when we really see and reflect on the nature of things like this, and, you know, we really have to make the Dhamma our island, make the Dhamma our refuge. You said, you know, make yourself as an island, make yourself as a refuge, and make the Dhamma. And how do you make yourself as a refuge? Just making the Dhamma as your island, make yourself as a refuge. And so that taking this truth, taking this teaching, taking this path as one's island, one's refuge, this is where you find stability. And how you do that? Establishing the four foundations of mindfulness. That's the way that we are able to have this place of stability and clarity within the very unstable, uncertain, changing nature of things. So that's a very beautiful teaching, and of course very direct, and something that we're doing all the time. Also, as a sidebar, and sort of, this is one of the suttas where the Buddha does talk about the island as the refuge, and as an image for Nibbana. And of course that's what Ajahn Amaro and I used as the title for our book on the teachings on Nibbana, sort of the island. So in this sutta, the Buddha is pretty direct with Ananda, as sometimes he could be, but also it is it's worthy of noting that the Buddha, when after Sariputta and Moggallana's passing away, he was sitting in the midst of the Sangha, and he was saying that, as the, you know, the Sangha doesn't feel complete anymore with now that Sariputta and Moggallana has passed. But in this particular sutta, so the Buddha, it's not that the Buddha didn't have any feelings, but he was trying to get Ananda to get back on course. And the image that the Buddha used as well in speaking to Ananda, as he said, it's like, you know, there's a big old tree that is healthy and it's old, it's well established, but said one of the large branches falls from it, but the tree is still there. It was like, Sariputta was an important member of the Sangha, but the Sangha is still there as a refuge. That's a beautiful, beautiful image. But then again, just that emphasis that the Buddha made on, okay, how do you create yourself as an island? How do you create the refuge? How do you find this refuge? And it's through the cultivation of these four establishings of mindfulness, and body in and of itself, feelings in and of themselves, mind in and of itself, and the phenomena in and of itself, and then with establishing with, say, that sense of ardency, of alertness, of mindfulness, and not being drawn into the greed and distress that we can feel towards the world. And this being attentive to the basic foundations of practice. So in reflecting on this, and of course this, and I mean that's should be a foundation for all of our practice, but particularly we'd have periods of retreat, say as monastics, also as lay people, and it's always good to come back to these foundations of mindfulness as a fundamental tool for establishing and nourishing and renewing our commitment or our connection to the practice. There's another sutta that I came across fairly recently that I thought it's also, because sometimes when we practice, and especially when we're in retreat, it can be, our commitment to cultivation, our commitment to some sort of realization can end up being, very, really serious. And this is the word that Ajahn Sumedho uses, sometimes we can get real dead serious. But dead serious not being a good thing. Just being too focused and too tense, too tight, too rigid in trying to make it, force it all to happen. And it's important that we learn how to, nourish the sense of well-being in our practice. And there's a sutta that I came across, and it said when a bhikkhu or when a practitioner has six things, they will find joy and happiness in the present life, and they will have laid the foundation for the ending of defilement, the ending of suffering. And what six things would be laying this foundation for the ending of suffering and the establishing of joy and happiness in the present life? And so the first is enjoying the teachings, enjoying Dhamma, and sort of really delighting in Dhamma, and so taking delight in the Dhamma, taking delight in these teachings that are so clear and refreshing and straightforward and are coming from a place of such clarity from the Buddha and from those who are really say valid teachers and representatives of the Buddhist teaching. This Dhamma is it's just when we do the chanting and recollection of Dhamma Sawakado Bhagavatado, this Dhamma is well expounded and just well articulated, well expounded, well explained. It's there for us to be able to go back to and enjoy. So enjoying these teachings. Enjoying meditation, enjoying bhavana, the cultivation, which is bhavana is like the broad term for the different types of meditation, whether it's sitting meditation, walking meditation, cultivation of mindfulness, development of refined states of consciousness. It's all under the umbrella of bhavana, and sort of the meditation. So that just finding ways to enjoy it and enjoying the opportunity to be present, enjoying the opportunity to be still and silent within, enjoying the opportunity to delight in a clarity of heart. And it's this the opportunity to actually develop the qualities of attention that just realize, just being distracted and caught up in the things that really distract the mind from what's important. You realize, that's a real blessing. That's something that is worthy of enjoyment. So to enjoy the practice and enjoy the meditation Because, you know, so often we approach it as a, something where we're, you know, we're going to achieve and make happen, and or we've got to do. I've got to get my time in on the cushion, and it becomes a chore, and the enjoyment goes out of it. But that not to be pushing and forcing so much that we don't take the time to enjoy what we're doing or enjoy this opportunity, and especially when we're in a period of retreat where there's continuity of, you know, everything set up to support our practice for 3 months and to not get so dead serious about it that you miss the opportunity to enjoy it. And then certainly for the lay community, is having a commitment to continuity of that meditation, that cultivation of meditation, that helps you realize, so living life with an anchor is so much more fruitful and beneficial. But then enjoying the teachings, enjoying the meditation, enjoying giving up, and not in the sense of rolling over and dying and giving up sort of thing, but giving up in the sense of abandon. The word in Pali is pahana. So it's like the abandoning, relinquishing, giving up. And that's the, like we chanted the Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta this evening, and part of the course of that cycle of the first teaching is the Buddha teaching the Four Noble Truths, and then part of the Four Noble Truths is also the, say, the duty or the responsibility that we have to each of the truths. And the second noble truth, the cause of dukkha, is tanha, various desires, and say the duty, the responsibility, the opportunity that we have to fulfill that is to pahana, to give up, to relinquish, to abandon craving, actually taking delight in giving up. In abandoning, taking just the roots of suffering, of greed, hatred, delusion, to, you know, delighting in the opportunity. You know, even when we see our kind of habitual stupid defilements that we know we shouldn't be buying into, rather than sort of beating yourself up about it, just to, no, I can delight in giving it up. I can delight in abandoning it. Yeah, okay. So just some of them are really deep rooted, and they keep coming back. But, you know, the kind of going out and fighting with them is not going to bring them to a place of cessation. It's the willingness to abandon and let go and to give up that is really the releasing of them. And so that, this is where this path of the Buddhas and the path of training requires a whole lot of patience and patience, endurance, a willingness to stick with the practice, because even when we see we should be doing. It's like Lompa Cha saying, you know, 80% of the practice is knowing what you should do and not yet being able to do it. You know, and that's the reality. And you just got to be patient to keep working at it, and you realize that the more you're willing to keep delighting in abandoning and giving up, then the more it's, you know, kind of left behind in our rear view mirrors. And the fourth one is a delighting in seclusion, delighting in solitude, viveka. So that this quality of not having to engage all the time, not having to have constant kind of social affirmation of me and who I'm trying to be for the world, or trying to be for myself even. I'm just trying to prop myself, my identity up all the time. Just being able to delight in seclusion. And seclusion is not always, you know, being by oneself off in the forest all the time. It's like the Ajahn Sumedho having this insight early on in the time of when he was still in London, and he was really missing Thailand, missing the forest monasteries, missing proximity to Ajahn Chah, and then stuck in a townhouse in the middle of London in the winter time. It's just everything is miserable. And then he had this image of where he realized that he was not going to find the same kind of seclusion or say monastic environment that he was used to. And what he needed to cultivate was the seclusion of the heart, the citta viveka. And that's, of course, when they finally did get out of, which wasn't that long, really. They were in London only for 2 years. And then they were able to move out of London and establish Chitter's Forest Monastery, which he gave the name of Citta Viveka, the seclusion of the heart. And that's something that we all have to cultivate, because we do try to look, you know, the mind is always going to how peaceful one would be if only one had the perfect conditions. If only we didn't have to live with that person. If only that person would conform to my ideas of how they should be. So that we're always setting up conditions that actually really do prevent us from experiencing peace and well-being. This sense of delighting in seclusion, and of course the seclusion of the heart is most important. But it's also on a social level, just that sense of constant, having to have constant interaction, or trying, nowadays people with their phones and constant engagement through social media or through the internet, of just trying, keeping the mind busy all the time, it's agitating. And so that to be able to delight in seclusion, and just settling and stilling and experiencing a quality of spaciousness in the heart. And it's a great opportunity for joy and happiness in this present life, and for laying the foundations for the ending of defilement. So the fifth thing that the Buddha points to as a basis for that result is delighting in kindness, and just this sense of fundamental kindness. And the word that the Buddha uses is literally is non-ill will, but is pointing to and to kindness. And of course we chant that with the chant on the on universal well-being. And you be ahang sukito homi, aniko homi, awero homi, abhyapacho homi. Abhyapacha is non-ill will or kindness. May I abide in well-being and freedom from affliction, and freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will. And that's laying the foundation for loving kindness, and that's the basis. And I remember years ago, again referencing Ajahn Sumedho, when he was asked what loving kindness was, and he said, well, loving kindness is learning how to not dwell in aversion. And this is because we can conjure up ideals of how should be with loving kindness, and having kindness and compassion to all living beings. And it is a lovely ideal, but it has to have a basis, and the basis is not ill will, to not get caught in the negativity, aversion, and that sense of irritation that we get toward existence, and whether it's externally focused or internally focused, to turn attention to non-ill will, turn attention to kindness. This being, this fundamental kindness is a basis for how we treat others, but also how we treat ourselves. Can we be kind to ourselves? Can we be attentive to the how we develop a sense of compassion and empathy to ourselves and to the world around us? And that is a great foundation for the ending of defilement and for well-being. The last quality, the last thing that the Buddha points to is to delight in non-proliferation, which is the word is nipapancha. Some time ago, I had one of these accounts where you need a master password, and then all the other passwords are all in. But my password was, part of it was nipapancha. There's because a long Pali and various other numbers and whatnot, but nipapancha was in there. It's definitely a password to joy and happiness in the present life, and laying the foundation for freedom from the defilements. But that papancha is proliferation, over-conceptualization, complication. So nipapancha is the opposite. That non-proliferation, non-conceptualization, non-objectification, non-complication. So that ability to not get entangled, because the mind trips itself up really quickly, and it starts proliferating. And on the root of the word papancha, its literal meaning means to expand or to spread out. And so you feel that in the mind. It's just that mind starting to expand and proliferate. And you don't want to clamp it down, but you don't want to buy into that proliferation. And just really, again, the sense of delighting in spaciousness and stillness and silence, where the mind is really, that's where our clarity is, and the ability to really discern what is really important, what is really useful, what is going to be a source of joy and happiness, what is going to be a source of ending of defilement and sources of dukkha. So that these six things, delighting in Dhamma, delighting in Bhavana, in meditation, delighting in abandoning, giving up, delighting in seclusion, delighting in kindness, delighting in non-proliferation, these are qualities to really attend to while we are cultivating the path, while we're developing this training, and in particular when we're trying to really establish a continuity of mindfulness and clear comprehension, because it's not that the mind is not capable of it, it's just we keep getting in the way.